This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's a Speedo by the Cadillacs, a doo-wop classic, in honor of the Grizzlies, who lived up to at least one of their three P's last night in the preseason debut, playing very, very fast.
All right. Grizzlies won over a Dallas team that didn't have Luka, Clay, Kyrie, P.J. Washington, for that matter, et cetera, 121-116. But since you started with Speedy, what did you think of the new Speedy offense?
I think one preseason game is just not enough, at least for me,
clearly,
to be like, you know, making declarations about the new offense.
Right.
I think we're still in the stage of people mostly like seeing, and we're in the stage of suggestion at this point, where people have been told what the offense is, and so they're seeing what they've been told to see a little bit. I need some more time with that. I think what would jump out to me was the pace of play and the kind of shots they get. Now, the process that leads to the shots, that's where you get into the system stuff. But it's no mystery what the shots are, because we keep track of that. And so I think if the team numbers for that one game were like their full season totals from last season, they would have been first in the league in pace and first in the league in three-point attempts. So they played very fast, and they got lots of threes. And I think they want to play very fast and get up lots of threes. I think there's a lot to learn, you know, from that point going forward. There's also, I may get into this at some point, there's sort of two things, at least for me, maybe for some people there's one thing. There is what's effective, and there is what is, like, interesting to watch. And I think for a lot of fans, those are one thing, because what's interesting to watch is a W at the end of the game,
right,
regardless of how you get there, which I respect. But I do think there are some stylistic differences for me in terms of what I like to see and what I don't like to see and what I prefer to see. And I think there's different ways to play fast. I think playing fast with this roster will not look the same as playing fast with the team they had 2 or 3 years ago.
What do you like to see and not like to see?
I think the roster they had, I mean, generally speaking, I like variety. So I like post-ups and pick and rolls and, you know, some mid-range jump shots off of the curl. And like I like variety instead of just like pure system stuff for the most part. But in terms of like fast break basketball, fast paced basketball, what I'm really sort of alluding to is, I think with the roster they had 3 years ago, the team that I dubbed Team Running Alley-Oop, that was a team that got up and down the floor and finished above the rim. It was a more athletic team. Brandon Clark's a commonality, but I don't know yet whether Brandon Clark, although he was very effective last night, is going to be as fast up and down the floor and as quick off the floor as he was 2 years ago. So you had Brandon Clark finishing lobs. You had Zaire Williams, who couldn't do much else, but was really good at being fast down the floor and getting high above the rim, finishing lobs. You had De'Anthony Melton, who was dynamic in transition. You had enough playmakers at John Brandt to get out and finish in transition. I think this is not a very athletic roster. And when you have a not very athletic roster playing fast, I think you're going to get a lot of what you got last night, which is transition threes. You get, in some cases, that's great. Luke Kennard transition threes, a great shot to get. Desmond Bane transition threes, a great shot to get. Marcus Smart transition three, maybe not. But I think for me personally, the fast break offense that yields more transition threes and fewer like alley oops might end up being just as effective. But for me personally, it's a little less fun.
Yeah. And of course, this is it's silly to be able to make any grand
right
pronouncements after one game. They were kind of sloppy with the 23 turnovers, whatever. It's also, not only is it just one game,
right,
it's also the first preseason game with a whole bunch of players who may not be playing the roles that they're going to play.
Yeah. That's why I'm being careful about my pronouncers. But the roster is the roster.
Right.
Like this is a significantly less athletic roster than they had 2 years ago, and that's not going to change.
Right.
They can get less sloppy. They're not going to get faster and longer and bouncier.
And then there were moments when you saw, the ping, ping, ping of the offense and off-ball movement and all of that that looked, looked different. But who knows how that will play out. I did like, Drew called it, wildly energetic offensive sets mixed with blistering pace and hot potato ball movement. So maybe we will see more of that. Zach Edey obviously got the fouls. You may not know this. He wasn't really called for fouls in college, so this is going to be a new experience for him. But despite that, the alley-oop was fun. The block was fun. What'd you think?
I wonder about there's been a lot of talk about, is he too slow for the pace they want to play? My bigger question is more about fatigue with him. I know he logged heavy minutes in college.
Right.
He didn't log heavy minutes getting up and down the floor like that.
Right.
And so I, 3 or 4 minutes of the game, I'm like, is he going to be able to play more than 5 minutes at a time the way they're playing? Of course, I don't know how many guys are going to play more than 5 minutes at a time if they play like this, right? Maybe there's a lot of in and out. I wonder about the speed of the game relative to sort of fatigue issues with him. I do think it will slow down. Like I said, like last night they played at a pace that was faster than any team in basketball played last season. It's one game, they've been focused on pace all through training camp and they want to show it on the floor. The reality is when you get into regular season basketball, things are going to slow down a little bit. I do think it would behoove them to have a little bit more variety and slow down a little bit. It's like, not only for Zach Edey, but for some other components of the game too. But I think Edey looked good. And again, it's one preseason game, so we'll see. I do think it will behoove them to get him as many touches in the paint when he's on the floor as you can, because you're going to generate the highly efficient offense by just him touching the ball in the paint. And whatever his, if you want to make up a stat, I'm sure someone's tracking this somewhere, whatever his paint touches per minute were last night, not high enough for me.
Right.
But it's one preseason game. And so, I think he looked good. I mean, he played, 18 minutes, 3 or 4 from the floor, 7 rebounds. He was credited with 1 block. I thought I saw 2.
They call one to steal. I think they called one of them a steal. I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it's like that, depending on where you are in the shooting motion when it happens. I thought he looked good. I think it's going to be a process with him. You got to remember, that is the second full basketball game he's played since leaving college. He played one full summer league game, and now he won one preseason game. I think our guy needs more reps of NBA basketball.
In terms of the stamina stuff, I get it, even 5 minutes at a time, but you will also have Jaren playing the five, and you may have Brandon Clark.
Right.
I saw that too, playing some in smaller lineups. So who knows, what they'll do there in terms of how many minutes he'll even play in a given game. The other guys, the other newcomers, as you pointed out on Twitter, looked good. Jake looked good. Scotty looked good. Jalen Wells looked good.
Yeah, I thought all three of them looked good. With Jake, it's one game, but you really want to see him shooting with confidence.
Right.
And then making, because if you shoot with confidence and at some point you're not making, you'll probably stop shooting with confidence. And so I think the key to Jake LaRavia, I think LaRavia has shown that he is not one-dimensional. He can do other stuff than be the spot-up guy. But that is the tipping point with him. He needs to be a high 30s three-point shooter to be a real NBA player, to have a long NBA career, meaningful NBA career. So that has got to come with him. And so once he got into the mix late last season, he shot pretty well from three. Hit him last night. You really want to see him be a 40% three-point shooter. And if he's a 40% three-point shooter, he will be a real player. I don't know if he'll ever be a starter. I don't know if he'll ever be a sixth or seventh man. But he will be a real player if he can shoot threes at that level. And that is his shooting skill. It's just about translating that into the games. I thought Pippen looked really good. He just continues to look really good. He also hit a couple threes, which is nice to see. But even generally, he was getting in the lane. He did have a bunch of turnovers, but that was part of the game, the sloppiness of the game. And Jalen Wells is sort of like LaRavia. He just has real natural shooting ability. And it's just a matter of, applying that into actual competitive NBA basketball. And, one preseason game doesn't mean that much, but it's nice to see him. If you're 6'7 and you have real shooting ability, if you're a 6'7 perimeter player and you have real natural shooting ability, those are two good starting points to build something with, you know?
And he also, really more than Laravia, has real ability to get up shots. You know, I mean, that's the other thing. He is not hesitant. And back to Jake, it feels like that wreck of a season was, I don't know, like it, maybe Vince, I don't know, whenever Vince Williams, he only got the chance because the wreck of the season. Gigi only got the chance that they got ultimately because the wreck of the, but it sort of feels to me like their talent was such that it was going to emerge whenever they got the chance. With Jake, you almost feel like he needed that wreck of a season to play in games that meant nothing to get his confidence up. I don't know. That's, it feels like that end of the season was really could reclaim his career for him.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. It's also, I mean, you know, with, it's not unusual for rookies to not do anything as rookies and then to become something later on.
Right.
I think that the tendency for the Grizzlies has been for rookies to not do anything as rookies and then continue to not do anything over the years. There's been a lot of that, or just to be good right away. The idea of the guy who does nothing as a rookie and then year two, year three starts to emerge is not that unusual a thing. That's a pretty normal career pattern in the NBA.
Yeah. Tracy McGrady did nothing for forever, and then he was turned into a star, for as I recall. Anyway,
All right.
Ja, obviously, the signature, whatever, like the injuries became the biggest story. We then subsequently heard that minor little tweak. Tim McMahon reported it, and then Ja said something, and Taylor said something, so we can...
Yeah, I was glad the second thing was just a continuation of the first thing, because when it first happened, I was worried it was a knee and not just the ankle again, just because the way... It had sort of that hyperextension look to it, with the way, like, the way it just sort of the way he landed. But if it's just a little ankle turn and he probably shouldn't have come back or whatever, it's probably not that big of a deal. So that's good. I'm going to guess. I have no idea, but I'm going to guess. Like, we're probably not going to see him on Thursday night here at FedEx Forum, but we'll see.
He is absolutely electric. It is amazing. You just plug him in and he is electric. But it does feel like every game, I wonder why he doesn't sprain his ankle. Just the way he plays. It is the peril of Ja Morant, right?
100%. I mean, he's... You know, he's played his career high games played to 67. That was his rookie year. I think there's obviously a chance you can match that. But if you were offered that today, I think you'd have to take it. You know, just the way he plays, the idea of missing some games with little stuff here and there is sort of built in. You hope you don't miss a season with a torn labrum. That's a special circumstance. But, like, you know, a little ankle tweak and you miss two or three games, I mean, that's just sort of it's going to come with the territory probably.
Grizz play Charlotte Thursday at FedEx Forum. You've got a piece up at the Daily Memphian where you write about Luke Kennard and Marcus Smart. And they pair beautifully because both mid-career guys, both guys the Grizzlies could have easily moved off of. And then just sort of the flip side of each other, right? I mean, one is gifted offensively and a defensive black hole, and the other is the opposite of that. By the way, before I ask you about their games at all, the stuff about Marcus Smart, you just mentioned it glancingly in the column, the stuff about the Knicks and Marcus Smart being, what did you make of that? I don't even know where that surfaced from.
I didn't make a lot of it. I don't remember, and I'm not trying to demean the report or whatever, but I literally don't remember. It was someone I was not familiar with, but it was some media person in New York, and who I'd never heard anything from before. And what it basically said was, I'm paraphrasing, but this is the gist of it. The Knicks have had internal's a key word here. The Knicks have had internal discussions about whether they think Marcus Smart would be a good fit for them. I mean, every NBA team in the league is having internal discussions every day about all
every
kinds of players
player
around the league and spitballing, hey, you think that guy would be any good for us? I mean, the fact that, so I believe that to be true as far as it goes. The fact that it got out, does that suggest that, like, you know, there's been something more active and then, like, oh, let's reach out to the Grizzlies about our little internal notion? It might be that. It might be that, like, somebody said something to this guy who doesn't normally put stuff out, and suddenly he has something he's not used to having and he puts it out. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. I think that I always start from the standpoint of, okay, does this thing make sense in the world? Like, for both sides, and I don't really see it for the Grizzlies, because that would mean a Mitchell Robinson deal, and I don't see the Grizzlies trading for an injured player making $15 million right now.
Right.
So I don't put much into it.
In terms of what we learned, obviously, it was a wreck of a season. He was injured, et cetera. What did we learn about Marcus Smart last year?
Well, there's a limit to what we learned because of the 20 games. But what happened is that the team, whenever he was on the floor, pretty much, not every second, but if you take everything overall and then you start breaking down into when he was on the floor for this guy or that guy, like the output doesn't – you change the output stays about the same, and that is that the team was really bad on offense when he was out there, and the team was pretty good on defense. And that was sort of the case just for the season, for no matter who was out there. So that was sort of the Grizzlies' story last season. But they were, like, even better on defense when he was out there. Like, all the evidence suggested that he helped the team's defense. And he certainly did not help the offense. I don't know whether he hurt the offense, because the offense was bad almost no matter what last season. But he certainly didn't help the offense. And it was pretty clear to me, you know, both in the numbers and just from watching the games, that he was much better when they played him on the wing than when they played him on the ball, which is sort of the idea. And so, you know, I think Smart's still a good player. I mean, how it fits and how well it fits in different lineups is something I think is still to be determined as they go into the season. I think he's going to start with John Moran and Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson and Zach Edey more than likely. But I think the team is going to have to evaluate that and to decide whether they want to keep doing it that way, because there's a chance they won't.
Well, it's interesting. Obviously, defensively, he's going to guard the best, you know, whatever, the best player on the in the starting lineup of the best wing or point guard or whatever. Whoever that person is, the head of the snake, is who he will guard on a given night. Offensively, how will he fit into that starting five?
Well, he's a guy who, like, he's sort of a find-a-way guy. He has a good feel for the game. He's an erratic shooter. He can get hot. He had some game last year where he hit like 9 threes or whatever. But he's a low 30s erratic 3-point shooter. He can't get to the rim at all off the dribble. Like, he's not like Scottie Pippen, you get in the lane. Marcus Smart doesn't get anywhere with the dribble unless he turns around and backs you down, right? He's a good passer, but he's not like a wizard with it. What he is a guy who just has a good general feel for the game, and that feel for the game has tended to overcome his limitations skill-wise and athletically. But I don't think, other than like be making good connecting passes and just making good plays on the fly, and they probably need some of that, I don't think there's a lot. I don't think there's a lot there. So it's a real question to me. I think there's a very good chance that by the end of the year, Vince Williams is in the starting lineup. You know, if he's healthy and he's the player he looked like last season. The question of whether the Grizzlies are better off with those four starters and Marcus Smart or those four starters and Luke Kennard, I don't think that's a question they're entertaining or much of anyone's entertaining. But I don't think the answer to that is at all obvious, given how much Luke Kennard seems to take good offense and make it even better. You know, when he's out there with players like that. So that's kind of an interesting question, but I think they're going to start Marcus Smart at least for now and see where it goes.
On Kennard, he has now played 63 games for the Grizzlies. It's incredible. He shot 48% from three as a Grizzly player, which is just astounding. But that phrase, can he make a good team, a good thing great? He can do that, but he doesn't make a bad offense good. Is that it? What's the record with Luke Kennard?
He's a shot maker, not a shot creator, right? And so if you put him out there with other sort of bad offensive players, I mean, there's no one there creating open threes for him, and like he's not going to do much on the dribble himself. So if there's no foundational offensive players to build around, I think his shooting's not going to do that much. But when you have John Morant, Desmond Bane out there, and they're the ones, like, you know, they're the engine of things, and suddenly, like, you know, I'm reaching for terrible metaphors here, but Luke Kennard's like the tires that are going to make it faster or whatever. But he's not the engine. You got to have the engine. And so when you have a good offense, a team that is good on offense without him, and you add him to that, suddenly, I mean, that's the evidence, and it's the samples are still small, but, like, the evidence of him playing with John, with Dez on offense, like those numbers should zoom up, like, you know, to the stratosphere a little bit. And so, is he a defensive drag? Yeah, but, right, you know, when you've had Jaren out there and whatever, you've been able to make up for it. And so the balance of the offense-defense with some of these role players is, you know, something for them to try to figure out. which is why I think the ultimate answer is probably Vince Williams, because I think there's less of a choice there. I think he's good enough on both ends.
You can read the piece over at the Daily Memphian. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. We got Fish on Friday on Tuesday coming up next. Busy day here on the Jeff Calkins Show. Before then, I will tell you, there was a nip in the air, Jeffrey. It's been a little chilly lately. So when you go to Oak Hall, they got their beautiful fall and you know, I love walking in there and seeing the sweaters and the quarter zips and like just fall stuff is beautiful. But they also have it in the collegiate colors that I've been telling you about that you can get your shirts in. And so you can get the same official collegiate colors, whether it's Alabama, God bless you, or Tennessee or Memphis or Ole Miss or Arkansas, I think, all in official collegiate colors and hoodies and quarter zips. So you can still head to the tailgate wearing your collegiate colors. Not a big garish logo or anything, just classy, beautiful, official collegiate colors in quarter zips and hoodies in addition at Oak Hall. Plus, head in and they get yourself a sport coat. You got Thanksgiving, you got the fall season coming up. And so you can spruce up your wardrobe in all kinds of ways. The clothes are beautiful. The people are the secret sauce. Go see our friends at Oak Hall. Fish on Friday on Tuesday coming up next. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ASPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Charles Fishman, our man in Washington, D.C., author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon, also a 3-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for Excellence in Business Writing, and retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand. Also, as is relevant today, a someone who grew up in Florida and therefore qualifies, I believe, as an expert on hurricanes. Charles, did you experience hurricanes as a youth in Miami?
Well, that's a great question. I lived in Miami from 1967 when we moved there, and I was 6, until 1979 when I graduated from high school and went away to college, and then graduated from college in 1983. And then I lived in Orlando from 1985 to 1992. So I have lived in Florida for 23 years,
okay.
And I am clearly the magic. I mean, lots of people say I'm the magic in lots of ways, but
right.
I've never been through a hurricane. I've never been through a hurricane. 23 years in Florida, 16, whatever it was, in
when did Andrew hit?
Growing up.
When was Andrew?
I think Andrew was in 1985 or 1988. In fact,
so your parents suffered from Andrew.
No, I'm sorry, I missed it. Andrew was 1992.
Yeah.
So that was 10 years,
was
9 years
lot.
After I graduated from college. And in fact, I was at a famous locale in northern Michigan during Andrew.
Really?
We didn't quite understand what was going to happen. And my mother and father and younger brother stayed in the house. And my father and my brother held the front door closed. Our house in Miami has kind of, you know, double doors. One side opens, the other side is sort of slotted in and stays closed. And they literally just leaned into it. And the truth is that if they hadn't done that, the house would have been destroyed and they might have been seriously injured or died. Once the wind gets in, then you're in trouble. And I have raced down as an adult with older parents, I have raced down to evacuate my parents.
Right.
I went down and flew them out probably sometime within the last 10 years. We have reservations at a hotel for my mom. My mom still lives in a house I grew up in what is now called Pinecrest, Florida, south of the city of Miami. Only because if the house I grew up in loses power, it is made of cement blocks, and she's 90, and you can't stay in the house if right. there's no air conditioning. You right. just it's just an un, it's an oven. It becomes literally a hot box. So
what do you make of Milton? What do you think of this Milton character?
I think we should go right to the audio that Jeffrey and I have conspired to set up in advance. Jeffrey has two audio clips.
Oh.
The first is from the mayor of Tampa named Jane Castor, and let's play that. And then the second is from a fire chief on a burial island. Go ahead, Jeffrey.
This is literally catastrophic, and I can say without any dramatization whatsoever, if you choose to stay in one of those evacuation areas, you're going to die.
Wow.
If you choose to stay in an area of mandatory evacuation, the mayor of Tampa says, you're going to die.
Jeffrey, did I not quote him earlier in this radio show?
You did.
I'm on
that's
top of it.
That's
I'm on top.
Woman.
That's a woman?
That's a woman.
Oh, that's a woman.
That's a woman.
I quoted her.
I quoted them.
Gender, I don't see gender. Okay, what's the next clip?
The next clip is from the fire chief of Treasure Island, which is a barrier island of St. Petersburg and Pinellas County. Go for it.
Just evacuate. I can't tell you enough. I'm not worried about your possessions. I'm not worried about your generator safety at this point or your EVs. Just get off the island with your life, and you'll be ahead of the game.
Well, seems serious.
I gotta say, you can't get blunter than that. Get off the island with your life, and you'll be ahead of the game.
Oh, what are the chances,
God.
By the way?
All of this
is in the way. I mean, you've heard this Memphis football game was supposed to play Friday night, and they've moved it to Saturday.
I have many thoughts about that. But I devoted way too much time.
Okay, they moved it to Saturday.
Myself this morning.
They did in their press release say to be evaluated further. So they seem to acknowledge
Can I say something about that before we get back to Hurricane Milton? And we should remember that lots of people in the audience first heard about Helene on Fish on Friday on Tuesday.
We're here to take. I don't think we need to be taking victory laps about a hurricane. Okay, go ahead.
The storm surge from Milton coming into the Tampa Bay area, St. Petersburg, Tampa, Hillsborough County, and south to Sarasota, is expected to be between 12 and 15 feet. That's a wall of water coming ashore. It's not a wave. It's a wall of water coming ashore taller than a basketball hoop. Think about that. Now, a college football game, you sort of alluded to it, but think of all the people who need to pay attention to get a college football game. Now they've rescheduled it. They've moved it. There are equipment managers. There's assistant coaches. There's the players. There's people all in the corona around that. Those people need to be in their cars driving to St. Augustine, driving to Atlanta, driving to Miami. They don't need to be hanging around.
Well, we don't actually know what they've done with it. That's the point. We don't actually know what they've done with them. Like maybe they have relocated to somewhere else. I don't know where they're practicing or whatever else. It does seem irresponsible to me. Here's my question. Is there a chance, though? Is there a chance?
You did it beautifully.
Is there a chance? What they seem to be waiting for is, listen, let's just, because they acknowledge in their press release that they may not play it Saturday. We're going to evaluate further. So what they're a good way of saying is, let's see what happens. If it's not so bad, and so what I'm asking is there a chance? You see all the time storms, it just glanced off to the left and it hit, you know, further up the coast. Isn't there a chance that happens and Tampa will be spared?
Sure. But this storm is going to savage Florida. It's the for this part of the west coast of Florida, it's the worst storm in 100 years. It could jog 50 miles south. That would be incredibly protective of Tampa and St. Pete. It could jog 50 miles north. The last couple of storms headed this way have headed south toward the Sarasota and Fort Myers area, devastating those places just a few years ago. But the whole point is, first of all, power is going to be out from Clearwater to St. Petersburg and maybe north.
And I agree. People don't need to be doing football. Any spare person, they need to be focused on football. They don't need to be thinking about football.
People don't even need to be thinking about whether they should think about Florida. You told me this morning offline, this isn't really the school's decision. I am sure the Tampa airport closed this morning.
Right.
The Orlando airport closes at 9 a.m. tomorrow, 12 hours before the storm is supposed to hit 100 miles away. Meanwhile, the folks making this decision at the TV networks are saying, well, what's it? Maybe Saturday things will be good. Nothing will be good on Saturday in this part of Florida that would make having a football game acceptable. And I think actually it would show some leadership and some thoughtfulness to say, you know what the priority here is?
Right, go home.
The safety of everybody in this community. The mayor of Tampa said, leave or you will die.
Right.
Unless you're on the USF football team or the coaching staff or the support staff, in which case, as you can tell, it makes me crazy. Anyway,
where does it come from? What is the storm? Where does this wall of water come from? I'm going to guess the ocean.
That is the kind of back and forth insight people come to us for.
Right,
exactly.
Right.
The water comes from the
ocean. It's not just a wave, it's a wall. Where's the wall come from?
It's not just a wave, it's a wall because you've got a hurricane spins in a clockwise rotation. The wind flows, counterclockwise rotation. So it's going around in the opposite direction of a clock, piling water up as it goes. And we're talking about the water, the height of the water has to do with the depth of the water that the hurricane is traveling through and the power of the wind. A tiny little bit of it comes from the fact that a hurricane is a low pressure zone and the water literally rises up. The ocean is pressed down less in that zone, but that's just a little bit of it. And as the hurricane comes ashore, it pushes literally 80 or 100 miles of water. That's how long the wall is, straight onto the land. And there's nothing but water behind the water. So think about a basketball court and think about how high a basketball goal is, maybe 2 or 3 feet higher than that, literally just coming ashore. And that
and 100 miles of it. It's not a wave of it. It's 100 miles of it.
No, it's 100 miles long, and it might be 20 miles deep, 20 miles wide. And the wave gets higher as it pushes ashore into shallower and shallower water. And if you think, if anybody who's ever been to this part of Florida, of course, it's beautiful. And part of what's beautiful is the cafes and the hotels and a lot of the little subdivisions and homes are right on the water. 15 feet of water submerges the entire first floor. If there's a second floor, you're 2 or 3 feet into the second floor, and that doesn't account for the waves on top of the surge. This is expected to cover. It is expected to flood literally all of Pinellas County, which is the county on the western side of Tampa Bay. That's where St. Pete and Clearwater are. 1 million people live there. I just went to the trouble to find this out. USF has 36,000 undergraduates, 36,000, 90% of them are Floridians. So they need to be, they all need to be somewhere else. Anyway.
All of this, by the way, is happening because the Gulf is warmer. Right? Isn't that in the end why this is happening fundamentally?
This storm is crazy. It's not just a hurricane. As of yesterday, it was the fourth strongest hurricane ever recorded, not just in the Gulf, but in in the Atlantic, based on its low barometric pressure and winds of 180. Overnight, the winds went down. There's this, there's a famous hurricane rating system, category one, category two, category three, category four, category five. First of all, literally on Saturday, this wasn't a hurricane. This storm went from being a tropical storm to the most powerful hurricane it could be in 24 hours. That has never happened in recorded human history before. From a tropical storm to a Cat 5 in 24 hours. It is aimed at a part of Florida, the Tampa Bay, this part of Florida, this exact metropolitan area, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, has not taken a direct hit from a hurricane since 1921, 103 years. In 1921, this whole community had 100,000 people. Now, it has 3.5 million people. It doesn't have 100,000 homes. It has 1 million homes. And so the level of devastation could be catastrophic. Mind you, Hurricane Helene slammed into this in a sort of glancing blow on the way north 12 days ago. And that storm surge was 7 feet. And the roads of Pinellas County, St. Pete, and Hillsborough County, Tampa, are still lined with debris. Literally, people, 7 feet of water, people lost their washers and their dryers and their refrigerators and their wallboard. And they pile that stuff up on the roadside, and then the county comes along and takes it away. That stuff is so dangerous. In 180-mile-an-hour winds, it all becomes lethal missiles. Ron DeSantis, yesterday, the governor of Florida, yesterday morning, ordered dumps to be open, the municipal landfills to be open 24 hours a day. One of those dumps, he literally sent state officials to pull the gates open Monday night because it was closed. And he has 300 state dump trucks on the roads removing debris, escorted by police. And as of this morning, they had removed 1,200 truckloads of debris in 24 hours. Now, it's nothing compared to what's sitting there, but every one of those dump truckloads of debris taken to a landfill made this a safer place. Here's how bad it is. Manatee County, south of Tampa, St. Pete, and Sarasota County, south of Tampa, St. Pete, are turning off municipal water services this afternoon to save the water systems, to protect the water systems. Much easier to manage this kind of storm and damage if you're not trying to pump water at the same time, pump sewage at the same time. They're turning the water off in advance. Joe Biden had a trip this week scheduled to Europe and Africa, and he just postponed that trip. So,
wouldn't it help, though, if we weren't sending all the FEMA money to Ukraine?
The good news is that as a result of the publicity on Twitter, they've stopped sending the FEMA money to Ukraine. It's such a fundamental misunderstanding of how the federal government works. You can't send FEMA money to Ukraine or to Israel or to Costa Rica. FEMA money is appropriated for
okay,
FEMA.
How about the fact that everybody only gets $750?
Hang on. So whether FEMA has enough money to do this or not is a separate question. There have been debates about FEMA funding. To be honest, Republicans vote against FEMA funding and then complain that FEMA doesn't do what it's supposed to. But FEMA is ready. The state of Florida, the governor is talking to the White House. The White House is talking to the governor. There are 300 ambulances staged, 100 helicopters. They are ready, as you can be, to handle this. Ron DeSantis is trucking in gasoline so that people can evacuate and fill their tanks on I-75 and I-4. This other idea that FEMA only provides $750 if your home is damaged or destroyed or your life is swept away, they provide $750 right there, no questions asked, so you can buy diapers and food and water because you may not have any cash. Your ATM card won't work. Your credit card won't work. They give you $750 so you can get on with your life in the 10 days or 2 weeks after the disaster. The question of what to do about people's homes and who pays to rebuild, that's such a complicated question that we can't unpack it today. My mom lives in a hurricane zone. If this hurricane were aimed right at Miami instead of right at Tampa, my mom would have evacuated. I would have gone down there and flown out with her on Saturday, and we would be worried about the house. But my mom doesn't have flood insurance on the house I grew up in. You have to buy flood insurance separately. The flood insurance on my mom's house in Miami, because of climate change, is $20,000 a year, separate from her homeowner's insurance. Separate. She's insured. The house is insured, but no hurricane damage is insured. So if a hurricane hits my mom's home,
because it's unaffordable. It's just unaffordable.
We quote unquote self-insure. We can't afford $20,000 a year. Right. So that's a separate, complicated question. This is going to be, I hope it's not, but I'm with the mayor of Tampa and the fire chief of Treasure Island. This is going to be catastrophic, whether it wobbles 50 miles to the north or 50 miles to the south. And you'll hear that it's going to be category 5, then it's going to be category 4, it might be category 3.
Yeah, what about that? When it hits, it looks like it's going to be category 3. I'm hopeful.
Completely irrelevant. That's just a measure of wind. As we learned in North Carolina, the thing that kills people is water. The thing that does massive destruction, in fact, these days is water. There's good building codes in Florida now, probably not good enough for 180 miles an hour, but nothing withstands an 80-mile wall of water. That's it? We're out?
Oh, my God. Amount of time.
There's never been a single topic.
Speaking of wind, yeah, exactly right. We've long-winded. Appreciate it, Charles. On Twitter or X at C Fisher. Let's hope for a good week. Let's see. We got Thursday night football now on tap. 49ers at Seahawks. 49ers, man, they need a bye week, Jeffrey, is what they need. 49ers at Seahawks. Right now, new customers, bet $5, get $300 in bonus bets if you win. That's right. If you win, you get $300 in bonus bets. All you got to do is bet and win on a $5 bet. Assemble your own same game parlay for Thursday night, 49ers at Seahawks. Go to FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's the promo code, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to make every moment more this season. Must be 21 or older, present Tennessee. First online real money wager only, $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Jeffrey, what is coming up next?
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jessica Benson, Trista Crick, Jason Fitz will join John today. Tim Murray joins me on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff will join Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for Now Work is Done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.